and a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X weekday mornings, 7 a.m. Don't forget you can take the podcast with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more on them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. As we come on the air this Thursday morning, we've got breaking news out of the House of Representatives happening just minutes ago as we were getting ready to go live. Here's House Speaker Mike Johnson.
On this vote, the yeas are 215, the nays are 214, with one answering present. The bill is passed.
The bill in question that you're hearing there from Mike Johnson is House Resolution 1, that being the aforementioned big, beautiful bill that President Donald Trump had spent some time earlier this week inside Congress trying to rally Republican lawmakers on support of this legislation. It has been a marathon House session. I believe they gaveled in around 2 o'clock this morning. Speakers have been going at it all night. I had the pleasure of listening to Hakeem Jeffries for about an hour or so this morning in the 6 o'clock hour, just complaining about everything as it relates to the current state of the country. The final vote, 215 to 214, two Republicans voting not in favor of the legislation, a couple of voting present as well. There is some other legislation being read in right now as this, again, is happening live this morning as we are here in the House of Representatives up in Washington, D.C. I'm not sure what is being read in right now. Let's dip in and see what's going on here.
And Amber Vinson. Copies of the signed agreements will be retained by the Office of the Clerk as part of the records of the House. Signed sincerely, Kevin F. McCumber, Clerk.
So I'm not sure. It looks like the chamber is cleared out pretty heavily, so I guess this might just be some other regular House business. So the big, beautiful bill has passed the House. Again, 215 to 214 for that piece of legislation. And, you know, this has been a very interesting process. I've kind of shied away from talking about it over the last couple of days, just specifically because details were kind of all over the place as it relates to what exactly was going to happen, how were some of the details going to come out with this, and obviously a lot of the negotiations going on, and it's kind of hard to keep up to date with the latest news on all of that. But it has officially passed this morning, 215 to 214, one person voting present, a couple of Republicans voting against it, Thomas Massie voting no, and one other Republican voting no as well. I believe Representative Swiker also voting no. And as you can imagine and understand, all Democrats in the United States House voting against it as well. And I'll say this. You know, you look at the power that President Donald Trump has over members of Congress as it relates to him going there earlier this week, whipping up the votes for this legislation. It's got its problems. Many fiscal hawks in Congress, specifically those in the House, have solid arguments to make about how it does not make the kind of sweeping government cuts that many folks, including the President of the United States, continues to rally for. So with that, there are some valid criticisms and some valid concerns about the legislation not necessarily being as fiscally sound as some may have hoped heading into this. It does increase spending. It does not cut all of the necessary garbage that is within the budget. Things like portions of the Green New Deal still continue to exist in various portions in this. So it's a kind of a mixed bag. However, this is something that has the president's backing. And with this, Trump calls it the big, beautiful bill. It will now make its way to the United States Senate. And if this is something that Trump is pushing, it is going to be a very tough situation for representatives to go forward and essentially advocate against it. It's an almost an impossible situation. It does have some of those tax changes and tax cuts in this legislation as well. That is a huge boost for the regular middle class, everyday American people. Those Trump tax cuts from the first administration were set and are set to expire later this year. So getting those put forward will mean a huge amount of savings, thousands of dollars per year for most middle class American families. So there's a lot of good. There's some things that probably could be a little bit better in the legislation as well. And so that is moving through this morning. And we'll continue to track some of the details as it relates to that. The House Rules Committee, which is the gatekeeper for the most of what goes on in the House of Representatives, met at 1 o'clock this morning to advance the bill. The House chamber came into session a little bit after that, around 2 o'clock this morning. You heard hours worth of, well, you probably didn't, you were sleeping, but there was hours worth of debate back and forth. Democrats, including Hakeem Jeffries, speaking against the legislation. But the reality is the Republicans have the vote. And the other reality is that Trump continues to have a major amount of influence, which, you know, of course, folks on the left will see this as, undue interference from the president of the United States. It's not interference or undue at all. You've got the president of the United States that has an agenda, has things that he wants to push forward, and is lobbying the other branches of government, aka Congress, to do that. Trump is a very dynamic figure. President Trump has an incredible amount of ability to sway not only public persona or public opinion on a variety of issues, but also has that same ability to get members of his own political party in line. And, you know, there's a couple of ways that you can tackle something like this. And I want to kind of lay both sides out, and I don't really know where I stand on it this morning. There's the individuals like the Thomas Massies of the world that aren't voting for this legislation. They're doing it because they're saying the bill doesn't go far enough. The legislation is not exactly what we promised the American people. It does not have the precision cuts and some of the reduction of the size, scope, and scale of government that we have been talking about. That's a fair opinion to have. And in some cases, it's an accurate opinion when you look at the legislation itself. However, at the same time, you have to go into this position where you look at the, you know, the 80-20. Is this bill 80% good versus 20% bad? And you've heard me for years talk about Ronald Reagan's rule over, you know, an 80% friend is not a 20% enemy. It's an 80% friend when you're 80-20 supporting somebody and agreeing with them. And for the most part, I think this legislation hits that threshold of more good than bad. When you start getting into the 50s and maybe low 60s as it relates to good versus bad in terms of legislation, well, that's maybe when the question starts arising of, can we do better? Can more be done? And the answer is you can always do better. You can always do more. I mean, the idea that there's no place ever for improvement is absurd. President Donald Trump feels good about this legislation. At the end of the day, it's going to go to his desk for a signature, and I would suspect that the United States Senate is going to have some similar discussions as it relates to this big, beautiful bill that is now making its way fast-tracked over to their chamber this morning for them to vote. Now, I'm not immediately clear as to when the Senate is set to take this legislation up. This is something that is happening, obviously, very rapidly. They are running up against the Memorial Day holiday weekend where they do not want to do that. And it actually looks like, let me see if I can get this pulled up. It looks like Mike Johnson might be speaking right now on the bill. Let me bear with me here as we do our live show this morning and see if I can find a feed of House Speaker Mike Johnson. It looks like he has just stepped up to the podium. I'm trying to see if I can get a live feed in here and see what he has to say as it relates to it. Struggling, unfortunately, to see where something like this is live as we stand here right now. can't seem to find a live feed. I'm seeing some pictures popping up on X showing the legislation taking place, but it does not look like I can find anybody that's got a live feed of it as we speak right now. Looks like the House obviously has adjourned after that vote, and with that, now we are in the position where we wait for additional details from the United States Senate as it relates to this legislation. So that is where things stand right now. Obviously, a lot of moving parts, a lot of moving pieces happening on this legislation. Fiscal hawks not necessarily in love with the bill, but as it stands, that is what the president is pushing for. That is something that he is continuing to push for in Washington, D.C., and it's very hard for members of his own party, these, of course, being Republicans in Washington, D.C., to actively go against the president. It's a very, very tough situation for Republicans. Because we know for a fact that if let's just say Republicans spiked this thing in Congress and this did not happen, and you had the House, many members of the United States House actively be against this, boy, does that create a very interesting situation for President Donald Trump. It puts him in a position where he is now going to go on the offensive against members of his own party, which I will argue is not a good thing. It is not a good situation when you've got control of the House, when you've got control of the Senate, and you've got control of the Oval Office, and you're struggling to get the your party, struggling to get the people that you are, for the most part, you know, 90%+ or 80%+ politically aligned with. That is a serious problem when you have to then start teeing off against them publicly over what's going on. That creates a very, very tough situation, not only for the president of the United States, but for those active members of Congress, and as well for the individuals that are voting on many of these people. Right, we've got midterm elections coming up, as you know, primary season will be March. You're going to see things over the next couple of months really start kicking up in a major, major level. You're going to have major primary battles being drawn in the sand. And so with that, it is and it's almost an unimaginable situation where you've got the president of the United States that is out there actively essentially pushing against members of Congress. But that's kind of the situation that you would watch unfold as this whole thing would take place. And so that's where things are kind of sitting this morning. Looks like I finally found a video feed of this coming in. I believe I missed the beginning of some of the commentary from House Speaker Mike Johnson, but this feed seems to be coming in right now. Here's Steve Scalise speaking on the legislation that just passed.
Working on the rest of the process still goes to the Senate. Senate has a lot of work to do, too. That's why we've been talking to the Senate for a long time. But it's their turn to take this bill and move forward. But I'll tell you, none of this would be possible without the leadership of President Trump, who every step of the way not only laid out the vision, ran a campaign on this vision, but every step of the way, too, said, whatever you need, let me know. And he was there to help us. Our great speaker, Mike Johnson, who was never deterred, probably hasn't slept in a few days, but never wavered in his commitment to get this done. And this whole team has come together. And our whip has never relented and never stopped pushing to get this done. With that, I bring up our great majority whip, Tom Emmer.
Thank you, Steve. On November 5th, the American people rejected the failed policies of the Biden-Harris administration and overwhelmingly endorsed President Trump's America First agenda. Using his executive authority, President Trump hit the ground running on day one to deliver on the promises he made to the American people. Today, House Republicans followed suit. Our one big, beautiful bill fulfills the mandate for change we were given last November. It allows President Trump to continue his successful border security and deportation operations by investing in more Border Patrol agents and ICE officers, funding the continuation of the border wall, and equipping our men and women on the front lines with the tools they need to keep us safe. Not only will the one big, beautiful bill help to make America safe again, it will also help to make America wealthy again. America's economic revival has already begun under President Trump's leadership, but House Republicans back it up in this bill by making the 2017 Trump tax cuts permanent, eliminating tax on tips and overtime, and throwing out regulations that burden American businesses and suffocate American innovation. From promoting the safety and security of our great nation and giving much-needed tax relief to American families, to unleashing American energy and bringing accountability to important government programs, there are wins in this bill for every corner of America. Take this as a lesson. Don't bet against the House Republicans. We've shown time and time again that we deliver for the American people, especially when it matters most. By taking hold of this historic opportunity, I truly believe we've unlocked the opportunities for generations to come. With that, I turn it over to our conference chair, Lisa McClain.
All right, we'll cut away from this as members of the House of Representatives continue talking about the big, beautiful bill that they just passed moments ago as we were coming on the air this morning. We'll probably expect some additional detail throughout the day as it relates to what the United States Senate is planning to do with this legislation. We'll keep you up to date with that right here on the show tomorrow morning. And a good opportunity to mention my X account. A great way to keep up to date with news throughout the day. If you're not following me over on X, it's at Nicholas M. Craig on X. Would encourage you to give me a follow over there and keep up to date with some news throughout the day. We've got a very concerning story coming out of Washington, D.C. this morning. This is almost unimaginable. A pro-Palestinian man is in custody after allegedly killing two Israeli embassy staff members who were leaving an event on Capitol Hill at the Capitol Jewish Museum late last night, according to authorities in D.C. The Embassy of Israel to the United States identified the victims as Yaron Lilizinski and Sarah Milgram, who were set to be engaged. They were a couple and they were together. Metropolitan Police Chief Pamela Smith said during a news conference that took place late last night, shortly before midnight, that officers from her department responded to multiple calls of a shooting near a museum just after 9 p.m. When authorities arrived on the scene, a man and woman were found unconscious and not breathing. Despite life-saving efforts from first responders, Smith said both were unfortunately pronounced dead on the scene. A 30-year-old man identified as Elijah Rodriguez of Chicago is believed to have committed the act alone and in custody, Smith noting that the gun that was used in this attack was also recovered. Smith said that the preliminary investigation showed that Rodriguez was allegedly observed pacing back and forth outside of the museum before he approached a group of four people exiting the building, including two victims, and began shooting. He then entered the museum where he was detained by event security. While in custody, he yelled over and over again, "Free, free Palestine, free, free Palestine." Yelled this over and over again while he was then in custody. According to the D.C. mayor, Muriel Bowser, she described the shooting as horrific and assured the community that there is, quote, no active threat, saying, quote, we will not tolerate any acts of terrorism. We will not tolerate anti-Semitism. A spokesperson for the Israeli embassy in the capital confirmed to Fox News early this morning that the two diplomats were shot at close range while an event hosted by the American Jewish Committee, ACJ, was taking place. According to that spokesperson, they said, quote, "We have full faith in law enforcement authorities on both the local and federal levels to apprehend the shooter and protect Israeli representatives and Jewish communities throughout the United States." The event at the museum was for young Jewish professionals who work in foreign policy and had a panel discussion on the finding humanitarian solutions for Gaza, according to details out of Fox News. So with this, you've got a horrific situation unfolding in Washington, D.C. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, I can't tell you that I'm surprised by this. I can't tell you that I'm shocked that something like this has happened. You have got a very radical wing of the Democrat Party right now. And it's, you know, in this case, we're talking about the far left radical wing that is on the side of the terrorists, on the side of the Iranian-backed terror group called Hamas, which has been operating in Gaza. Not only are they in favor of that group, not only do they want the success of that group, but they are willing to commit unimaginable acts of atrocity to show, I guess, what I'll call solidarity with that group. I mean, committing a murder in Washington, D.C. of two Jewish people because you were on the side of Hamas. You are on the side of the Iranian-backed terror group that has, for at this point, years called for the death and destruction of Jews throughout Israel. Now, we're not getting into this morning whether Israel has responded with appropriate force. Have they gone too overboard? You can still have a valid discussion about, did Israel go too far? Have they acted in an inappropriate manner as it relates to aid for the citizens of that are still living in Gaza and so far and so forth? You can still have that discussion. But what you're seeing now, and the reason that something like this happens in the United States, is because the left tolerates this. For years now, we have seen groups of far left radicals on your college campuses, on your city streets, blocking highways in major metropolitan areas, yelling and screaming about supporting an Iranian-backed terror group that is operating in Gaza. This has been tolerated by the left. And I would argue in some cases, this has been supported by the left. I'm not a big fan of, you know, silence is violence, that whole notion. I think that whole thing is kind of absurd. But the fact that more Democrats have not spoken out against people in their own party for these very radical ideas, these very radical things that they support, they are wishing this stuff, I guess, into existence. Because we know the sentiment exists. And it's fine. If you hate Israel and you don't support the United States giving a whole bunch of money to Israel, that's totally fine. I think that's a fair opinion to have, and I, in some cases, agree with a lot of that. But there's a difference between not supporting money from the United States to Israel and being on the side of a terrorist group. Being on the side of a group that beheads women and children. You know, it's so funny when you look at this, because the group of individuals that are on the side of Hamas are the same lefties that are constantly yelling about inclusion and racism and LGBTQ rights, all of these great things that the left cares so much about. Meanwhile, if you look at the nature of these Palestinian groups, there is no rights for women. If you are gay in many of these countries and it is found out publicly, you will be thrown off of buildings. You'll be stoned to death. I mean, it's an atrocious thing that goes on there. Yet these Palestinian groups have found allies in the radical progressive left. And I think it goes to show you a couple of different things. Primarily, the fact that when you look at what comes out of many of these groups, there is really no kind of sense of what goes on in the world. Their ability to understand, even at the most basic level, any sort of geopolitical structures is just non-existent. And it's obvious because they'll be holding up signs that say LGBTQ for Gaza, LGBTQ for Palestine. It makes absolutely no freaking sense. The Palestinian culture is very much against homosexuality. So when you're holding up a sign at a protest in New York City that says LGBTQ for Palestine, you have no freaking idea what you're saying. I mean, your inability to understand anything about what goes on in some of the regions across the world is shocking. Absolutely shocking. But that's what these groups do. And I really don't know how all of this gets wrapped up. I think there's a lot of money that is funded into these groups. There's a lot of what I guess I'll call ringleaders of these groups that are in charge of whipping up and ginning up all of this controversy and all of this rage. And then you've got a bunch of mindless, moronic liberals that just follow lockstep because, as a liberal, many of them have absolutely zero ability to understand anything that's going on. They have no ability to look at a situation from a top-down view and think about, where do I fall on this? And let's look at the pros and the cons. Let's look at the situation. They're just sheep. And they just follow in line with whatever they're being told, in this case, by their activist ringleaders, these various agitators in the crowd that spawn a lot of this up. And we've got evidence of that, of course. You look at back last year, so many college campuses, including UNC Chapel Hill, turning into a third world country as these groups take over. And what did you find time after time? With the arrests, with everything that was going on, you found a bunch of people were arrested who were not students on campus, were not even of college age, yet they were on campus building these zones without law enforcement, building these tent cities and occupying the front lawn of Chapel Hill. They're not even students at the school. These are outside influence groups that come in because the left has no ability to critically think about anything. Come in, say, hey guys, this is what we're going to do. This is our narrative. These are our chants. This is our agenda, and just push forward with it. And so all of this has been happening for years now. You've got many folks on the left that will not speak up against this. And so when I say I'm not shocked and surprised that this happened, I genuinely mean it. And it's a sad situation, but I'm not surprised. You have a contingent of the Democrat Party that is not only incredibly anti-Semitic in their ideology, but they believe that it is a solution to push things forward is to actively murder and kill Jews. I mean, that's what they believe. They will chase Jewish students off of campus. They will call for the death of Israel, the death and destruction of Israel on college campuses and in city streets. So this is the logical progression of all of this. Unfortunately, when this stuff goes unchecked, when there is no sane voice in the room to say, hey, maybe you guys have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. When there's no sane voice to say, you guys, what you're saying makes absolutely no sense at all. Then this is the unfortunate reality of what happens. This is the unfortunate reality of what you see. And it's a horrific situation. It's an awful situation that takes place, but unfortunately, it is not surprising, and I will argue it's not shocking. Because the narrative has gotten taken away, has gone out of control on the left. There is no adults in the room to discuss anything as it relates to sane or normalcy. It's a disastrous situation. So details are still a little bit sparse. I'm looking at a new update this morning from the New York Post. This Elias Rodriguez character, 31 years old, was once linked to the Party of Socialism and Libertarian, which is a far-left group that regularly posts anti-Israel rhetoric on social media. The group posted just recently as Wednesday afternoon, "End the genocide, Israel out of Gaza now." The group did confirm Rodriguez's membership in the wake of the shooting. However, they distanced themselves from the violence, which, of course, is complete horseshit. These groups are actively calling for violence. They have continually, for years, actively called for violence. Then once one of their minions carries out violence, they go, we don't support violence. We don't support that kind of violence at all. But you support it in your rhetoric. You allow this stuff to fester in your groups. You allow this stuff to fester in your circles. And then you're shocked. Then you're surprised when somebody who's in your groups carries out a horrific act like killing two Jews last night in Washington, D.C. as they were coming out of an event, specifically targeting them because they were Jewish. Really? You're shocked by that? Really? You're going to distance yourself from the violence? Give me a freaking break. It makes absolutely no sense. This stuff is allowed to fester and boil in these little enclaves on the left, and then it ends up boiling to a point where something like this happens. It's unfortunate. It needs to be discussed. Democrats in Congress need to speak out against this kind of rhetoric because it's their party that's behind it. It's their fringe groups on the left. And I'm not one of these people that like the left where they say, oh, well, because a Democrat says something, therefore they're calling for violence. No, I don't think so at all. I'm not a fan of, oh, blood is on the hands of Democrats because this, no, not at all. But I think if you want the rhetoric to be toned down on all of this, it's time for the adults in the room to speak up. It's time for people that have a sane, rational opinion, which I know is hard to find on the left, but there's a few of them. It's time for those individuals to rise to the occasion and speak up against this stuff, but they don't. Why? Because then they risk alienating the left. If they don't, they then risk losing a contingent of individuals on the left that they need their support for, right? Because when you look at these very far left fringe groups, who are they voting for? They're voting for the AOCs. They're voting for the Rashida Tlaibs, the Ilhan Omars of the world. These very far-left progressive radicals that have gained, I will argue, significant amount of power in Washington, D.C. So the shooter, thank God, is in custody. A horrific situation unfolding. Two young individuals who look like, based on the pictures that were made available by the Israeli embassy, show two people that look to be in their at their oldest, their late 20s. Two very young, good-looking people shot and killed last night in Washington, D.C. This image from the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. A horrific situation unfolding, but again, not surprised. The left has been allowing this kind of rhetoric to take place now for years in their various sects of their party, and it's unfortunate that it came to this situation. I'm sure we'll hear more on this throughout the day. It happened late overnight, so reactions still coming in this morning. We'll track the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, I want to tell you this morning about the law group here in Wilmington and thank them for their continued support of the show, keeping us on the air weekday mornings. When you have legal challenges that arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing issues like a divorce, navigating a real estate transaction, or maybe you're in the position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. You'll see all their areas of practices. They've got a great blog on there where they discuss a variety of legal matters. All of that available on their website, lawgroupnc.com. Again, their phone number, 910-251-6088, the Law Group. Experience and dedication you can rely on. And again, we appreciate the support of the law group right here on the Nick Craig Show. We'll grab a quick break this morning. On the other side, President Donald Trump in a very interesting exchange with the president of South Africa in the Oval Office yesterday afternoon. I'll have audio and video of that coming up as the Nick Craig Show rolls on this morning live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Want to encourage you to get access to additional content, including daily show notes and more, plus our monthly Zoom chat, which will be coming up next week. Those details will be coming out a little bit later on today. You can get all of that by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've had a couple of new folks come alongside over the last couple of days and support the show. So I encourage you to do so as well over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. I look forward to chatting with everybody next week. We now turn our attention to the Oval Office this morning, where President Donald Trump was on a tear yesterday with South Africa's president after there was some back and forth exchanges, some back and forth commentary over what President Donald Trump and many have described as genocide against white farmers operating in South Africa. The president of South Africa in the Oval Office yesterday, President Donald Trump did not let him off the hook by any form that you could possibly look at it. Here is the exchange and the president bringing receipts, as he says, as it relates to the back and forth here. Take a listen to this.
For you to be convinced that there's no white genocide in South Africa.
Well, I can answer that for the president. It's for him. No, seriously.
I'd rather have him answer.
Yeah, I'm going to answer that.
Our president will respond to you.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr. President.
It will take President Trump listening to the voices of South Africans, some of whom are his good friends, like those who are here. When we have talks between us on the quiet, around a quiet table, it will take President Trump to listen to them. I'm not going to be repeating what I've been saying. I would say if there was Afrikaner farmer genocide, I can bet you these three gentlemen would not be here, including my Minister of Agriculture. He would not be with me. So it will take him, President Trump, listening to their stories, to their perspective.
Now, I'm going to stop the South African president right there because, one of the people did speak. One of the individuals that was alongside with the South African president talked about how there is, he brought him to try and prove there's no systematic persecution of white farmers in South Africa. Well, he really didn't have that to say at all. Take a listen to this.
I grew up in an area in South Africa that is a farmland area, Polokwane.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
There is some issues up there, obviously. My dad was a property developer as well as a part-time farmer. And yeah, some of his buddy farmers got killed. The farm is still going. My brothers run it. But it's a constant battle with farms trying to get, they're trying to burn the farms down to chase you away. So it is a concern to try and make a living as a farmer. And at the end, they, you know, without farmers, there's no food on the plate. So we need the farmers to produce the food.
Farming, right? He wouldn't even want to do what you're doing, right? They love farming. They don't want to leave. But it's a struggle.
Yeah, and you know, food and fresh water is the most important thing in life. You know, without those two things, you can't survive.
How is the water there?
The water is great. Obviously, all the water comes out of the borehole, out of ground for us down there. Yeah, it is a battle to get the water out sometimes when all the equipment gets stolen all the time that you're trying to get the water out.
So does your family and your brother, do they feel safe on the farm?
They live behind electric fences, you know, try and be at night safe. But it is constant whenever you leave that something could happen. And
there's nowhere to live.
You know, both of them has been attacked in their houses. My mom's been attacked in their house when she was 8.
So the South African president brings this guy who's apparently some sort of property developer or something like that in South Africa to prove to, as you just heard him in the previous clip saying, President Trump needs to listen to what people are saying. He needs to listen to the voices in the room. Well, here's the voice in the room. This is a guy that the South African president brought with him to the White House to prove that this isn't happening, for him to say, yo, yeah, my father had plenty of friends that were killed because of their race and what they were doing in South Africa, noting that his brothers have to live behind an electric fence so that their farm doesn't get ransacked and burned to the ground. to completely blowing that out of the water. President Donald Trump brought receipts on this as well, back to that original clip of the South African president.
That is the answer to your question.
But, Mr. President, I must say that we have... No, wait. We have thousands of stories talking about it.
Sure.
And we have documentaries, we have news stories. And that, is Natalie here, somebody here to turn that? I could show you a couple of things, and I would... I have to... It has to be responded to.
Yeah, sure.
Let me see the articles, please, if you would. And turn the lights down. Turn the lights down and just put this on. It's right behind you, Johan.
Oh, man, Trump is just brutal with this.
Without you, people are going to occupy land. We require no permission from you, from the president, from no one. We don't care. We can do whatever you want to do. Who are you to tell us whether we can occupy land or not? We are going to occupy land. Yeah. South Africa, occupy land. That's who we are.
The South African president in this, while this video is playing, is readjusting his tie, kind of rubbing his head. Because President Donald Trump brings, I'm not going to play the full thing because it's the audio is kind of hard to hear, but it's about a five-minute video of various groups throughout South Africa calling for the genocide of white farmers, cheering, dancing, yelling, and screaming about it. Here's the end of it and President Trump's additional comments.
Okay. I mean, it's in South Africa. That's
where we need to find out.
President says, I need to find out. Like he's never seen this before. The South African president. He's never seen this before. First time he's hearing about it is sitting in the Oval Office with President Trump. And the whole concept of that is absurd. This has been well documented. This has been well reported. It's not a secret, not a surprise, not something that just popped up out of nowhere at all.
Mr. President, the Pentagon announced that it would be accepting a Qatari jet to be used as Air Force One.
What are you talking about? You to get out of here. What does this have to do with the Qatari jet? They're giving the United States Air Force a jet, okay? And it's a great thing. We're talking about a lot of other things. It's NBC trying to get off the subject of what you just saw. You are a real, you're a terrible reporter. Number one, you don't have what it takes to be a reporter. You're not smart enough. But for you to go into a subject about a jet that was given to the United States Air Force, which is a very nice thing. They also gave $5.1 trillion worth of investment in addition to the jet. You ought to go back to your studio at NBC because Brian Roberts and the people that run that place, they ought to be investigated. They are so terrible, the way you run that network. And you're a disgrace. No more questions from you. Go ahead. Go ahead, talk about that. His name is Peter something. He's a terrible reporter.
President Donald Trump just absolutely teeing off on the media. NBC News. So they play. Trump plays a 5-minute video of people of various leaders, various activist groups in South Africa calling for the genocide of farmers. President Donald Trump shows the video, plays it for everybody in the Oval Office to see. And immediately after it's done, some jackass from NBC News is like, well, do you have any comments on the jet, the new Air Force One? That's the first thing out of his mouth. That's the first thing that is on the top of his mind. Let's talk about a jet leaving, a jet being gifted to the United States. And it's not just NBC. It's everybody. Here's a post from PBS yesterday afternoon, 3:25 p.m. White farmers have been murdered in South Africa, but those numbers account for less than 1% of the more than 27,000 annual murders nationwide. Experts said that the deaths do not amount to genocide. The president, President Donald Trump, misled about land confiscation. So that's what PBS is up to. That's what they're doing. So you've got multiple media outlets, and it's not just NBC News. It's not just PBS. It's the whole thing in the media saying, oh, well, you know, only 1,000 people are getting murdered or something like that. It's only only 1,000, you know, white farmers are being murdered, something like that. So it doesn't really matter. It's only 1%. This is the media. This is the left-wing media. It's only 1% of white farmers, so who cares? It's absurd. This is a serious international issue, and the media wants to hide from it. The media doesn't want to discuss it. The media doesn't want it to be brought forward, and it's obvious as to why NBC News immediately pivoted away from the issue at hand. Here's Scott Jennings on CNN last night, as, of course, they were not a fan of this either.
Whether you call it a genocide or not, the facts are white farmers in South Africa have been murdered. A lot of people have tried to cover this up. A lot of people in, I think, media in the United States have tried to cover it up. Obviously, the South African government doesn't want to talk about it, so it was kind of a boss move for Donald Trump to roll that television in there today. And I think even the agriculture minister in the Oval Office confirmed that these people are, in fact, being murdered. So my question is, if it's not a genocide today, how many do we want to let get murdered so that people around here can be satisfied? Okay, now it's a genocide. Let's let a few more. I don't understand. We're talking about 50-something people they were trying to let in, and everybody's losing their mind after we let in 20 million illegal immigrants over the last several years. The president is trying to prevent genocide from happening any further to these people. They are clearly being discriminated against. Some have been murdered. This was an interesting spectacle in the Oval Office today, but it had to happen because I don't think anybody was telling the truth about it.
And Scott Jennings is 100% right. The Western media doesn't want to talk about it because it doesn't paint a good picture. Paints a very, very bad picture of huge racist situations that continue to take place in places like South Africa. The South African president seems to be completely oblivious to what's going on. He told the president time and time again that this wasn't happening, that, you know, this is not what it seems like, this is not exactly in the situation. I mean, I watched the entire thing in the Oval Office yesterday. And he said time and time again that it didn't happen. Talking about, you know, was asked about denouncing some of the language in that. And this is what he had to say. This is what he had to say about some of the language used in the video that Trump played.
So you denounced that type of language in the video that you saw?
Oh, yes. We've always done so. As government, as my own party, we are completely opposed to that. We, in 1955, adopted a document which said South Africa belongs to all who live in it.
But why wouldn't you arrest that man? That man said, kill the white farmers, kill the white farmers. And then he danced, and he's dancing, and it's kill the white farmers. I think, I'm not sure, but I think if somebody got up in Parliament and started saying, kill a certain group of people, he would be arrested very quickly. That man is going all over South Africa, and that's not a small party. That was a stadium that holds 100,000 people, and I hardly saw an empty seat. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of representation. And those crosses, we have dead white people, dead white farmers, mostly. And you take a look at Australia. They're being inundated, and we're being inundated with people that want to get out. And their farm is valueless. It's valueless. And they just want to get out with their life. And this is a very serious situation.
It's an incredibly serious situation. Great comment coming in this morning on our Rumble chat. Completely oblivious or straight up liar as it relates to the South African president? It's a great question. I mean, my gut reaction would tell me it's probably a mix of both. you kind of maybe shelter yourself from the information that you don't want to see. So there's some level of being oblivious. And the other fact is he doesn't want to admit to it. The South African government obviously doesn't want to admit to it. You know, the United Nations has nothing to say about this. You know, the great UN, all those stupid blue helmets roaming around the world. Haven't seen anything from the UN about it. Haven't seen anything from all these, you know, love and peace, great left-wing activist groups that are always talking about how, you know, we as a globe need to get together and peace and all this other nonsense that they're always talking about. It's insane. I mean, nobody's discussing it. You've heard coverage and conversation on places like Fox News. You've read on various conservative news outlets about this. You've heard conservative radio hosts and podcast hosts talk about it. But other than that, it's essentially been mum is the word because it doesn't paint a very good picture. And the only reason that it's being talked about now is because the left-wing media believes that they can use this as an opportunity to talk about, oh, well, you're trying to shut down immigration. You can't allow these farmers in from South Africa, even though there's a very clear and obvious situation unfolding with individuals that are being actively persecuted and actively discriminated against based on their race. You've got activists in South Africa that are running around the country talking about and promoting the killing of farmers who are in the most part in South Africa happen to be white. It is a racial-based situation that's unfolding. And mum is the word. Nobody really wants to talk about it at all. It's an awful situation. The president of South Africa is, I would say, straddling the line between being completely oblivious and a liar. There are social media clips that have been making their way around over the last day or so in which the president is calling for land to be taken from these farmers without compensation. Trump is, the point that Scott Jennings made on CNN, it was a boss move. Not too dissimilar from the situation that unfolded with Zelensky in the Oval Office, where he tried coming to the White House, tried painting a very different picture than what was reality to the American media to try and get sympathy, to try and get more money for the war, only to be completely obliterated publicly by President Donald Trump. And this is the standard. If you're going to come to the United States, and you're going to have issues as it relates to whatever it is in your country, whether it's war, genocide, whatever, you're going to be taken to task on it. You're not going to come and sit down next to President Trump or Vice President J.D. Vance and completely misrepresent the situation. It's just not going to happen. You could see the delegation that came with the president from South Africa with their heads down while this video was playing because they know exactly what's going on. They're not completely oblivious to it. They want to maybe project that. But that's the situation. So I'm very grateful for the president, and I'm very grateful for him in calling this stuff out. He's got, for lack of a better term, he's got balls of steel as it relates to this stuff. He is not going to lay down and take this crap from various countries, and he's not going to allow this stuff to be misrepresented in front of the American people. And because of that, well, he has forced the media's hand, at least some media outlets, to talk about it this morning. So once again, another win for President Donald Trump. We'll continue to follow that situation as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Once again, thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We're tracking what is set to be a busy day in Washington, D.C. and North Carolina. We'll have all those details coming up for you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show, live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.